teach from a sutra called the Sutra of the Wise Woman. It's a small sutra, and it's a story between a wonderful old gal and the Buddha, and she basically tricks him into talking about emptiness, right? And put those around your ears. Oh, that's really cute. Okay, that's nice. It was sweet to look at. Yeah, nice. And obviously I'm not going to teach the whole sutra, so every class we're going to do a little parts, right? And I'm so happy that Alistair is here so he can catch me on any Tibetan mistakes that I make, because he's far superior to anything I could possibly hope to do. But anyway, something I wanted to do was I kind of wanted to just start by leveling, you know, the playing field in terms of some of the terms that we're going to be working with and what we're going to be talking about. And, you know, for those of you who are interested in being a DCI teacher, you know, something that I've been doing for the last 2 years is going all over the globe, you know, literally circling the globe a couple times a year. And, you know, I've got a translator next to me, and we do these breakout groups, right? You know, Mira knows, like, there's all these little breakout groups inside the retreat where you get a group of, like, 10 in Taiwan, sometimes it's up to 30 people, and then your job is to do some real kind of check-in personal interaction and see where everyone's at with the teachings and how to apply them to their own life. Because that's what's interesting for people is, like, look, I have a real situation with my boyfriend now, or I'm about to get evicted, or, you know, the bank is stealing from me. You know, can you tell me how this stuff could help me tomorrow when I leave here, right? So that's what the breakout groups are for, is like, give me something real, how crazy it is, like the mafia is stalking my family. Like, that was a great one in Taiwan, you know? And then how can you help me? Right? And then you have to think and say, okay, like, let's look at causes and conditions. So something that on day one of the breakout group, right, that I always start with is, you know, we get people in a circle and we say, okay, we're dealing with two things here, right? Seeds, right? And we call it potential, depending what country we're in. But for here, we'll say emptiness, right? Or blankness, right? That's a great translation. Blank, right? So seeds and potential, how do they work? How do they relate to each other? And how are these two tools for you to walk out of here understanding them going to help you in your life, right? So how do seeds work? And I know if, you know, anyone, I say this probably every time I get up and talk about anything, but I'm just gonna say it again. Seeds, the mind, okay, if we look at the mind is like a very sensitive video camera, right? Now, this for me gets me where it hurts, because that means that I am the most important person who witnesses anything that I do. If my dad doesn't see me do something, if the IRS doesn't see me do something, if my best friend doesn't see me sneak her good candy bar out of the refrigerator when she's not there, right? If somebody doesn't catch me, or it's not public information, or somehow I can get away with something, I feel like it's okay, right? And the new story, right, is you. Right, is you're the judge. And it's not even like, well, I decide that it's okay that I cheat a little bit because I deserve that because the kids were really mean to me when I was 7 and I'm paying myself back now for the pain I had to even me out with all those other people who were fortunate, right? Just stuff I tell myself, right? You know, like, if you actually, you know, embrace this concept that what you see yourself do, what you hear yourself think about other people, is the most important witness, okay? Because it's true, okay? Whether you justify it or not, you are storing information like crazy, constantly, all day long. You're storing information, right? You steal a little something, you slide on a little something, you think a little something, you take a little something. You are creating your future reality by what you do now, by what you think and say and do now. Even if someone says, hey, I heard what you did and I thought it was okay, you know in your heart if it was okay or not, right? You are the best judge of your own behavior. And, you know, we ask ourselves, well, why can't I meditate, right? Or why do I feel like I'm getting stupid? Why can't I grasp these concepts as fast as I used to, like 15 years ago, right, when I first heard everything? Am I just slowing down? Or am I honestly not being honest with myself, and I'm lying to myself, and I am not moral, and it is creating some deep vibration around my heart, and I can't rest or sleep well anymore? I talk to other people, and they feel that vibration somehow, because I'm not being honest with myself, right? And it's affecting everything. It's affecting my whole life. You know, what happens if you get moral? What happens if you get crazy moral? In the beauty of that word, right? Because, you know, the story for all of us, you know, and I catch myself doing this, I'm just like, I just want to be comfortable. I just want to be comfortable. I've got some nice little story written out for myself where I'm going to set things up for myself to be comfortable. And it's okay if I'm following the rules of society in terms of how dishonest I am, or how unmoral I am, or how I treat other people, right? But what if the story was something bigger than that? You know what I mean? What if the story actually was that you're gonna get enlightened? You can't afford to have any black marks on your slate. They're not necessary, right? They're not necessary, right? And I heard Rebecca, she's getting a massage. I heard Rebecca, I overheard her teaching a refuge class yesterday in our living room. And she said, you know, the freedom vows, right, are called freedom vows because they give you freedom, right? And we'll go through real quickly what they are. Okay, so seeds, the video camera of your own mind. You ingest everything that you do, okay? It creates your reality. Karma doesn't get boomeranged out. We talked about that before. It doesn't go running out to some planet. You are karma. Everything you did to your mom and everybody is the cells in your body and is creating your being and who you are, right? You do a deed, you plant a seed in your heart, it flowers and comes back and creates your reality. So that's level one, right? That's your first tool, understanding seeds and how they work. So everything I do, everything I think, everything I say plants a seed and has a future result. Whether it's my own stupidity, my pride leading to my own stupidity, my own fudging on my own taxes, which leads to my constant financial stress, or, okay, the second wing of the bird, right, is emptiness or potential. And I gave this example before, and please humor me. I'm gonna tell the story again, okay? So let's say that Kent and I are going out to a movie, right? And let's say Kent doesn't know me that well, right? And he asks me out on a date, right? He's really cute, and he's like a skier, and I'm all excited. And he takes me out to a movie, and we're in like a crowded theater in San Francisco. And lots of his friends are there, because he has a lot of friends in San Francisco, and I don't really know anybody. But so we're together at the movie, and the movie starts to play. And again, there's some great heroine that I identify with, and at some point in the movie, they start to hurt her, and I freak out, and I get out of my seat, and I run down to the screen, and I start pounding on the screen, and I start yelling, "Stop hurting her, what are you doing?" And Kent becomes very embarrassed. and Kent's, the wheels in Kent's mind start turning, and he goes, "Oh my God, she's crazy. Mercedes is crazy. She doesn't understand that the movie is a projection." She doesn't understand, okay, that the movie is not real in the way that she thinks it is. It's still giving her emotions, right? It's still causing stuff to happen to her body, but she's confused. She thinks that those images out there are real in the sense that if she goes and she tries to work with them and adjust them out there, she can change something, okay? Mercedes doesn't understand that that movie is coming from a projector that's in the back of the theater. And if she wants to change the movie and what's going on in her outside world, she's got to go down to the level of the projector and change the reel from inside. Okay? That's all of us, right? That's all of us. We're all crazy. We're all totally crazy, right? We're running around trying to get things and talk to people and manipulate our outer reality without asking the question, well, where is this coming from? What seed did I plant to create that picture playing now, right? And how do I change it? I go down to the level of causes. I go down to the level of seeds, and I change my seeds, and that's how I change the movie. Otherwise, I'd be insane, right? And that's what they speak about in Buddhism when they talk about, think of your reality as a dream, a star, flash of lightning, dew, whatever, a bubble. Right? Probably, obviously, the Buddha would be talking about movies too, right? An illusion, something that's there and flashing for a second that we grasp onto as real. Okay, so, and again, the image of a blank screen is a beautiful symbol for emptiness, right? Emptiness, blank. Not meaning empty of something, right? But blank, pure potential, right? This is our screen that we're walking into, okay? So we plant the seeds, they flower and go on to that blank, pure potential and create a reality, right? Really obvious, right? Really obvious. Most of everyone knows this, right? But I just wanna make sure that everyone has these two concepts really clear. How seeds work and then how seeds relate to emptiness. It is because things are empty that we can change anything. Right? It's because our reality is empty, right? There's no one Mercedes, right? There's as many Mercedeses as there are looking, including myself. There are as many ex-boyfriends as there are observing that ex-boyfriend, including himself, right? Okay, so ACI, Course 1, Class 3. A lot of my ACI coursework was lost in the shuffle, you know, at Diamond Mountain in a sandstorm somewhere. And so I'm being forced to go back through and redo a lot of the coursework, right, that just doesn't, you know, I know I did this. Winston graded it, like I did it, I remember. No, there's no record of you doing that course, Mercedes. Okay, okay. So... So, you know, I'm going back through and I'm working on some of the courses. And ACI, Class 1, Course 3, they go through the 10 qualities of a lama, right? Most of us know this. Dulwa, Shiwa, Nershiwa, Yuntin, Lakpa, Sunche, Lungichuk, Deni Raptok, Make Den, Tseni Daki, and Koopang, right? Dulwa, Shiwa, Nershiwa. Okay, let's go through these really quick because they relate to the text. First quality of a teacher, when you are on the quest to find a teacher in your life, first quality you're looking for is dulwa, right? What's dulwa? Yeah, tame in the sense, it's the verb for when you break a horse, right? To tame a horse. It means tamed, right? It means they are broken. Meaning they are somebody who's keeping their morality, right? The top 10. Right? Of three, first three of body, second four of speech, last three of mind. Killing, stealing, sexual misconduct. Those were the top confessions that were going around the other night. Did you notice that? Killing, stealing, sexual misconduct. The reason they're the top three is because they're the top three. Right? Okay, so those three we do with our body. Next, going down the next four of speech, right? Lying, divisive talk, harsh words and idle talk in some kind of order around there, right? Okay, so a teacher is controlled in those ways of body and in those ways of speech, right? Last three, jealousy or craving, ill will, and correct worldview. Those are the three of mind, right? Those are your freedom. Those are your freedom vows. You keep those and you're free. So when we're looking for a teacher, the first thing we're looking for is a teacher who is dowa, right? Who is controlled. Someone who has a master of morality. Okay. Number two, shiwa. Concentration, right? You must have the concentration in the moment not to break your morality, right? You have to be somebody who's able to control your mind and not say the harsh thing when somebody says the harsh thing to you, right? So the second quality of a teacher is that they're shiwa. Shiwa normally means what? Peace, yeah. Here it's referring to the three trainings of morality, concentration, and wisdom, and the first three qualities of a lama relate to those three, that basket of three. So peaceful in the sense that they have concentration and they're not breaking the morality. Number three, nirshiwa, right? Very peaceful. This refers to perfect concentration. First one was concentration not to like break your vows. The third one is concentration in an intellectual sense in terms of your understanding of emptiness. So being able to meditate on, emptiness, right? So it's not a direct perception of emptiness necessarily. It's somebody who has that ability to investigate reality, right? Shamatha, right? Okay, number four, Hyunten Lakpa, okay? The teacher should be more advanced than you, all right? Their breadth of knowledge, their wisdom, their character should be something that you aspire to. Right? They should have some good qualities that you can think of and say, I want to be like you, and they should know more than you, right? Okay, number five, sunche, joy, joyful effort. The teacher should be happy to teach you, to organize things, to listen to your problems, to help you. They should have joy in doing good works, right, in the world. Number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, Lungi Chuk, okay. They should be rich in book knowledge, right? They should be rich in the scriptures, not just like book knowledge, but they should have an authoritative vibe about them in terms of that they really studied and they're not just making this stuff up, right? They can move through a scripture and understand it and impart to you the wisdom of that scripture. Denny Rabtok, ideally they've seen emptiness directly or they're close to it or they've had some kind of deep realization on emptiness, okay? Ideally you want to grab an Arya. If there happens to be one floating around on the planet, they come to planets about once every 1,000 years. Okay, Make Den, a master teacher. There are people who are incredibly wise and they don't want to teach you. They don't like to teach, they're grumpy, they don't want to talk to you, they want to stay by themselves, right? And then there's people who love teaching and they have no idea what they're talking about, right? So you want to get somebody who's a master teacher, right? Sorry, I'm going through these really fast, assuming that you guys have all done ACI and you know them, but I just want to review them before we get to the scripture because I think it's important. Sewe Dakni, Meek Mate Sewe, right? What's Sewe from the Jesam Kapa mantra? Meek is eye, May is eyes that don't see. What's Sewe? Love, right? Love. One description I heard of this is love incarnate, meaning that they look at you and it's just the image of love. They are overjoyed to teach you, they're overjoyed to help you, they're just exuding a love, okay? Last one is Kuo Pang. They don't get tired of you or teaching you, giving you again and again and again the same teachings over and over again, And you're like, why does he keep teaching the same thing over again? It's like, maybe because you don't apply it to your life yet. You know, it's like, I could stop if you would just like do it, my God. Okay, right. So they don't get tired of telling you 100th time the same answer. You know, you come to them with a new real problem. It's like, oh yeah, okay, Mercedes, stop doing that to other people. All right. Okay, so let's go. I want to go to the text now. Can we put that up on the board, and maybe we can turn out just the center light. Is that all right? You tell me if you guys can see. Probably takes a couple minutes to heat up. So I do everything right over here. Is there a way to tell? Am I plugged in? Oh yeah, good. Okay, great. So it's still heating up, so hopefully you guys will be able to see it in a minute. Can people read that? What's he needs to, Droma's saying he needs to sharpen it. Do I need to make this smaller on my screen? How do I do that? Let's see here. Let's go to 100. But then you can't really read it, can you? Yeah? It's okay? Can people read it?
Bigger.
Okay, let's just move it. I only have a choice of 150 or type in 125. That's all on this. Okay, great. Okay, so that's. All right, can we see the top of the. Can you lower him down a little bit? Is that possible? Not really, huh? Oh, you don't have to hold it. Stand there and hold it. That's great. Okay. Almost. Okay. And then, yeah, just a little bit over this way. That's great. Okay, great. So the Sutra of the Wise Woman. Huh. All right, so these are my notes, but I just thought it would be easier if I went through them with you. So I'm gonna zip up to where we left to last time, but I just want to read it for those of you who weren't here. Okay, in the language of India, this text is called Arya Mahalalika. Oh, Sanskrit text. Sorry, I'm not that great at Sanskrit. Pariparcha Nama Mahayana Sutra. In Tibetan, it's called Pakpe Dremu Shupa Shejawa Tekpa Chempo Do. In English, this is called the Sutra of the Greater Way, called the Teaching Requested by the Wise Woman. All right. I bow down to the family of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. Once I heard this teaching, the conqueror was traveling around the countryside of Virginia, along with a great gathering of 1,250 full monks. Among them were a great many bodhisattvas who were great beings. They came to the location of the great city of Vaishali. At that time, there was a woman living in the city who was great with age. She was a great grandmother who was a fragile 120 years old. She had been collecting grass near the monastery and now had sat down to rest. Great, this is where I wanted to get to. Okay. From a distance, she saw the conqueror approaching. The sight of him brought faith into her heart. Okay, I want to go through the qualities here that she describes that she sees. All right. The first one. Okay, great. Up here. Zepa. Okay, beautiful. Interesting word. It means physically attractive. It just means beautiful. This word is never used with men, ever. Never applied to a man. And here, it's the first thing. It's like, he's beautiful. He's beautiful, okay? It's typically only used for women or a city. Okay. So the first quality, he's beautiful. All right. Next, okay. Dangwar Chepa. Has to do with clarity. Can mean faith or belief. Oftentimes, it's associated with water, okay? But here, we're going to translate it as shining. Okay, so he was beautiful, he was shining. Okay, next word. Now, Wangpo means your senses, and then we've got Dulwa, right away. Okay, so right away, they're saying his senses were controlled, right? What do we say? His sense, great. His senses were controlled, Dulwa, right? The first quality of a lama, so he's got the 10. Next, Tuk, right? This is the honorific word for what? Yeah, for Sem. Sem is mind. For me, you'd say mind. For an honorific, you would say Geshe-la's holy mind. You would say his holy Tuk, right? Okay. So then we've got Tuk Dulwa, right? His mind was controlled. So he's saying, she's looking at him from distance. He's like, he's beautiful. He's shining. She can see he's got great morality, right? His senses are controlled, and his mind is controlled, right? The sixth sense. Then, interesting, there's another Dulwa. The author throws another Dulwa on there. And we were wondering why, you know? And, could be a textual error, but basically how we're going to interpret it is like, you know, his senses were controlled, his mind was controlled, the dude was controlled. Okay, so it's like it's a summary right at the end. It's like we got control here. Okay, all right. Next, Dulwa, Dong. Okay, Shine. Okay, quiet. Okay, quietude. Right, like his third quality in the classic description of what you look for. Perfect ability to concentrate on an object is the definition of Shine. Maybe it's not the definition, but it's a perfect ability to concentrate on an object. Typically, it's associated with emptiness, that's the object you're going to go for. Okay, choke nepa is that next. Okay, great. So what's choke? What's chu choke?
Highest.
Yeah, highest, right? Highest. Nepa means found, okay? So it just says highest found, okay? This means, and it's at past tense, okay, this means that he found the highest form of shamatha, okay? And it's not just the direct perception of emptiness, but it's connected with omniscience, okay? That implication of the found the highest meditation means he's kind of in a direct perception of emptiness all day long, right? Okay, then, choke, nepa. Okay, Beppa, okay? Beppa? Do you know how to pronounce it? Say. Huh? Beppa, great. Sanskrit word for this is Gupta. Anyone know Sanskrit? What's Gupta mean? Does somebody say it? No. Okay, it means hidden. All right, it means hidden. This word is never used in relationship to people, okay? But right in there, he was hidden, okay? That word, okay, bepa, right, typically is associated with treasures underneath the ground, secret things stored away, jewels in your house, right? But they're applying it to the Buddha, right? They're applying it to the Buddha. And probably the implication is the jewel of his mind, the jewel of who he was, he didn't come in and flaunt it, right? He was like this secret treasure that kind of subtly walked into a room and didn't really lead on to like, you have no idea who I am, right? Like, anyway, so he was unassuming, he was hidden. Okay, and then Kyun Mepa? Mepa, what's Mepa? Not, right? Yeah, not. So faults, he didn't have them. Okay, no faults with this guy. All right, so here we go. His senses were controlled, his mind was controlled, he was controlled. He had attained the highest form of meditation and had stilled his mind completely, but he was hidden, and what he was, he did not show to others. He was faultless. Okay, great. Moving on. This is really kind of clear. Gyatso, right, like His Holiness, right, is Big Lake, which means ocean, So we've just got the so here, which means, okay, it's a lake. We're talking about a lake, right? Like or similar to, crystalline, clear, cell, right? Like cell, clear, right? I'll skip over that section. So he was completely tame, right? Because the whole thing starts off again with another dulwa. They throw in another dulwa, so they're hitting you again. He's controlled, he's tame, right? He was completely tame. And like a crystal lake without a cloud of confusion. Confusion I got from murkiness, which doesn't read so well. Okay, now this next section is interesting. This next section, I really like this. You see here, pakpa, okay? What does pakpa normally mean, for those of you who know Tibetan? An arya, right? An arya. Typically means arya. It also can mean elevated, okay? So it's got this sense of verticality, right? So it's got this sense of something that's going up. And then they talk about, you know, a butter lamp. There's a word in here for a butter lamp somewhere, right? And then we've got golden, okay? So elevated golden, similar to a butter lamp, a wick of butter. Oh, here we are, wick of butter. Okay, but when Geshe-la was translating this with me, he said it's the image of a being of fire, right? Like the butter lamp. But he said somehow you got to get the sense of that it's somebody who's erect, like upright, right? The pakpa means they're elevated, but they're moving forward. But they're like a fire that's moving forward. So a being of fire walking on the surface of this. So then we ended up with what we came up with here. He was completely blah, 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 blah. Okay, like a pillar of golden fire moving across the surface of the earth. Something in there. See, okay, across the surface of the earth. Something in there that means standing out. The pakpa, the elevated, means standing out. So that's a little bit of an interpretation. And he said it was okay, don't pay so much attention to the actual words. He said get the sense of this pillar of fire moving towards her, right? That's golden. Then at the end here, we've got... okay, this is nice. Okay, so Pel, who's Pelma? Pelma, right? Annie Pelma. What does her name mean? Glory, right? Glorious, shining, something like that. So we've got Pel, okay? And Gi, okay, it means, okay, Pel, the Sanskrit for Pel is what? Does anyone know? Shri, right? Okay, so then Gi is like in his glory. Okay, then, okay, so he's walking forward across the surface of the earth, and then we've got in his glory, we've got Klame, Klane, and Klanewa, okay? They all mean shining, all right? But they're trying to get the sense of a building on what it means to shine, right? So it's just a more intensified word of the word shine. So he's this pillar of fire moving across the earth, and then we've got, okay, he was shining, ablaze, and radiant, right? It should increase, right, in his glory. Okay, interesting little etymology. Hla, right, what does hla mean? Because we've got hla me, hla ne, hlang newa. What does hla mean? Angel, okay, what's the Sanskrit for angel? Devi or Devo or Deva, yeah, right. So div, D-I-V, means to shine. So within the word for angel, okay, is the quality of to shine. And apparently, okay, div came down into English, obviously, in divinity or divine, right, because it means to shine somehow. But also... it was dew, D-E-W, right? Means to shine as well, that comes from this Sanskrit. And there was the father in the sky, right, used to be called Jupiter, okay? And somehow it got changed over time to Jupiter, right? But the Jew in Jupiter is actually dew, which comes from the deva or devi, right, which is to shine. Anyway, Geshe loves that stuff, so... there. All right. Radiant is glory. Okay. Next. Okay. This is pretty obvious. He was perfectly adorned with the 32 marks of a holy being. All right. That's the only word by word Tibetan I'm going to do because that's all I can handle. But I just wanted to give you a little bit every week. So I thought it was beautiful when you related these to the 10 qualities that are the classic qualities of a Lama. and all these qualities that she's listing that she sees in him as he's showing up. The old woman's mind filled with devotion when she looked on him, and with a heart of faith, she went to him. Once she arrived, she bowed and touched her head at the conqueror's holy feet, circled him thrice, and then sat down to one side. Okay, so here we get into the emptiness of the text. The question that she asks, okay? She's tricking him, right, to talk about to give her some teaching about emptiness, right? Which is fun to do. If you get a great teacher, you know, at a restaurant, you're like, what's that Chedrock thing? Like, can you I don't want to talk about that. You know, try to trick them into talking about emptiness, right? Joining her palms, she bowed her head towards him respectfully and spoke these words. Okay, what's she going to ask him here? O conqueror, where does birth come from? Where does aging come from, and where does it lead? O conqueror, where does sickness come from? Where does death come from, and where does it lead? All right, so we're going to focus on this question today in this class. Okay. I wrote this in here, right, just as a reminder to myself. So the first thing that she's asking about is something called keganashi. Okay, keganashi. Let's find it here. Okay, here we go. Ke is birth. Okay. Then we've got. Okay. Sorry. No. Sorry. I can't see it clearly up there. Okay. Great. K, birth. Ga, aging. Na, sickness. And chi is death. Okay. Another interesting thing. Okay. And these are known as the four sufferings, right? Of a life. Some are obvious sufferings and some are not so obvious, right? And look at what she says here, okay? Where does birth come from, right? Where does aging come from and where does it lead? Where does sickness come from? Where does death come from and where does it lead? Do you notice anything? She's not asking where
does
birth lead? Okay? And she's not asking where sickness leads. But she's asking, where does aging lead and where does death lead? Why? What Geshe said was, most people don't ask where does birth come from, right? Where does birth lead, right? Because we all know, you're born and then you, have a life. Right, so it's not so interesting or so poignant to think about where does birth lead. But it's poignant to think about where aging leads. Okay? Where does sickness lead? Well, one of two things happens, right? You're either going to get better or you're not. Right? You're going to get better or you're going to die, or you're going to live with some kind of chronic condition that's going to drastically alter your lifestyle. So sickness, we know, you either get better or you don't, right? Where does death come from and where does death lead? Right? She's specifically asking about death and she's specifically asking about aging, right? Where do they lead? Again, a little bit more poignant to think about where does death lead? Okay. So there's a whole nother list of questions that she goes through and he answers them, but I'm gonna focus on these four and his answer to these four. In terms of, let's focus on sickness. Ke ga na. Okay, let's focus on sickness. Right? Where does sickness come from? Yeah, and where does it lead, right? So, if you are someone, or you're talking to someone who suddenly becomes ill, right? Or you have a loved one that suddenly becomes ill, right? Or you think that you have a tumor all of a sudden. You know what I mean? Like you read all these books about cancer or something, or you find out that your friend has cancer, and then all of a sudden you're like, I think I have cancer too, right? Like you or something happens to you, right? And you get a prognosis, right? The mind begins to panic, right? And it's like, get me the best doctor. Or Geshe gave the example of like, you know, you get gout all of a sudden, and you start thinking, what am I eating? What am I eating? I have to change my eating habits, right? Or I have something in me that needs to be cut out of me, right? I gotta get it out, right? And there's an immediateness, right? Especially if you're dealing with something that's possibly terminal or something that's gonna really change your life. There's an immediateness, kind of like a process, right, that we all go through, like when you get that kind of news about your family or yourself, and you think, okay, I'm either gonna come out of this and it's gonna be awesome, or this is it. Right? And my mind, right, is immediately searching drastically, frantically, intensely, like with all of my energy, for the cause and how I can get rid of it in an ignorant sense, right? I need the best doctor. I need to make sure that my friend has the best doctor. I need to find a specialist. I need to talk to other people. I need to figure out what's causing like my pain and get a massage to fix my pain, right? Like suffering, right? Like where does suffering come from? Where does suffering come from? Where does disease come from, right? And this is what she's asking. She's like, this is like our lives, right? This is what's obsessing, right? From not a lot of us are like really looking death right in the face, right? Unless you're fortunate enough to have some kind of terrible death happen to you that drastically affected you and started to make you ask questions of like, where did they go? Why did they die? What happened to them, right? But a lot of us are dealing with suffering, right? Like the plain old pain of like a breakup of relationship, some terrible thing where you just think you're not gonna come out of it, or illness, something that's scaring us, right? Something that seems beyond control, right? So what does the Buddha say to her, right? She asks him, let's focus on the sickness there. Where does sickness come from, Lord Buddha, and where is it going? Let's just jump down to his answer, and we'll do the other stuff another time. Okay, so the conqueror spoke, okay? Sister, okay? Birth doesn't come from anywhere at all. Aging doesn't come from anywhere at all, and it doesn't go anywhere either. Sister, sickness doesn't come from anywhere at all. Here we are, sorry. Sickness doesn't come from anywhere at all. Death doesn't come from anywhere at all. And it doesn't go anywhere either. Okay. What does he mean? What does the Buddha mean? Buddha doesn't mean that it didn't come from anywhere, okay? It doesn't mean that it didn't come from nowhere, right? What he means is it didn't come from where you thought it came from. It didn't come from anywhere that wasn't you. Your disease didn't come from anywhere that wasn't you. Okay. This is an example in the text of trunge, right? Trunge. What does trunge mean? Figurative. Yeah, figurative or interpretation, right? Trunge lekshe ningpo, learning to interpret what the Buddha taught. So the word trung, right? T-R-A-N-G, trung, it's the base of trung. Yeah, something like that. Okay, means to extract, right? To pull out and extract the meaning, right? So when the Buddha said, kill your mother, kill your father, right? Obviously, in that particular situation, because we also have vows to honor our mother and father, he probably didn't mean to go out and kill your mother and father. You have to extract the meaning from what he's saying. Your sickness didn't come from anywhere, and it isn't going anywhere either, so just forget about it and don't do anything, right? You don't exist. Death doesn't exist. Your suffering doesn't even exist, so don't pay attention to it. Obviously, he's speaking in a symbolic language here, okay? He's trying to get us to shock us, right, into understanding that that thing, that tumor in my body is so real to me. It's so real, and I think I've got to take it out, and I think I've got to hire somebody and pay them everything I possibly could to take it out. And I have to pause and ask, where the hell did this come from? Because there's nothing out there that isn't me. There's nothing out there that I haven't created. There's nothing that isn't coming from seeds, okay? But luckily, he doesn't just leave her here, okay? Sickness doesn't come from anywhere, lady, right? Death didn't come from anywhere, and it's not going anywhere either, right? Luckily, he works with her. Sister, it's like this, okay? Consider how a fire bursts forth from the rubbing of two wood pieces of wood together, and from the conscious effort of the person who moves them. But when the grass and the wood have burned up, that fire has lost its cause and will die. Sister, ask yourself, where has the fire come from, and where has it gone? And she replies respectfully, O conqueror, the staying of the fire stays because the causes were gathered. When these causes are no longer gathered, the fire will end. It will die. He, she, together just gave us the cure for all illness, okay? The staying of the fire stays because the causes were gathered. When these causes are no longer gathered, the fire will end, it will die. Any pain, any suffering, any sickness, any illness, anything in your life, okay, that scares you, that you don't want in your life, that's consuming you, if you can identify the cause for what is ailing you, if you can identify the cause for what your problem is, and you can eliminate those causes from being together. When the causes are no longer gathered, when you can either purify, okay, what you have gathered in your heart to make yourself see yourself be ill, okay, or you can stop creating, okay, that circumstance. If when you can stop putting wood and grass and sticks into the fire can't survive. It can't live. Okay, without the causes, okay, that are creating it, all right, it will die. He granted her this reply, Sister, in the same way, every other thing in the universe comes from causes and conditions. When they are deprived of those causes and conditions, they end. Therefore, nothing in the universe ever comes from anywhere at all. and nothing in the universe ever goes anywhere either. Okay, so what's this text saying? Is the text saying you're not supposed to have an operation? No. Is the text saying you're not supposed to go out and seek a good doctor if you're sick? No. Is the text saying if you have gout, are you not supposed to look at your diet and possibly change your diet? No. So, you know, I asked Geshe, I said, okay, you've got somebody in a crisis situation, okay, over, let's say, their health, okay, crisis situation over their health. What are the steps that somebody who understands emptiness is supposed to take in that moment, okay? He said, A, consult your physician, okay? B, create the causes that their advice will work. The seed will express itself, right? The seed that you plant by finding out that you have some kind of illness, calming down, calm down, right? Do the necessary steps that you are supposed to do. Have somebody look at you, talk to somebody, and then ask yourself, what's the cause behind the cause? Why am I sick? Where has this sickness come from? And how can I personally take responsibility, right, that the medicine or the operation is going to work on me? Because we all know, right, we all know the story of the aspirin. Right? Why do we take aspirin? Right, we believe it'll work. We want our headache to go away. Does it always work? Sometimes the aspirin works. Sometimes the aspirin doesn't work. Sometimes you take a medicine, it has a great result. Sometimes you take a medicine, it doesn't work at all. Sometimes you get an operation, you have a wonderful result. Sometimes you have an operation, doesn't work out. Okay? So we want to get you into the basket of people that had success. Okay? We want to get you into the basket of people where the medicine always works for you. The doctor is always excellent and knows what they're talking about, and the operation is always successful. I see Geshe-la take aspirin. I see Geshe-la take medicine, probably out of compassion to me to let me know I haven't got the karma yet to sit home and just help somebody and then, you know, something changes for me. I still have to work with these contributing factors, right? I still have to eat food when I'm hungry, right? I'm still working at that level. I don't know what he's doing privately, but as an example for me, he takes the aspirin when he has a headache and he helps other people, right? And then that aspirin becomes a vehicle for that good seed of helping the other person to flower, and then the aspirin works, right? Okay. Now, for me, I've been fortunate to not have any debilitating illnesses. You know, people around me have. And for me, that question of where does suffering come from? You know, where does suffering come from? Because I've definitely suffered. Right? Definitely experience suffering. And I've definitely, you know, experienced the death of someone I loved, you know, incredibly. And I think that grief, you know, is a really interesting kind of suffering. I think grief is almost a kind of insanity, right? And the thing that gave me the most peace out of, you know, my search on this path, you know, was being able to understand and work with, you know, the death of my mom. You know, my mom died, my first mom died when I was like 6 years old. And then as I progressed in my life, I thought about her death. And, you know, she died alone. And it would almost haunt me, this idea of what were her last thoughts. You know, did she think of me? Was she sad? She understood she was dying. She understood she was alone. It was an accident. And there was no warning. She just, you know, was dead the next day. And, you know, we found her. And I remember, you know, being younger and in college and sometimes feeling like I was almost going crazy at just the thought of the suffering of someone you love was greater than any suffering I would be willing to take on myself. Like the thought of her pain in her last moments, you know, knowing I was in the room next door and she was bleeding to death and no one could help her. And what could have gone through her mind, you know, I thought I was going to go crazy. And I think I was a little bit crazy, you know, like, and, you know, in that darkness, right? Like in that, I think like I get this image, like in that place of our deep darkness, like when we're, you know, in a relationship that's just feels like it's killing us, right? Or we've been hurt. We've been abused, we've been humiliated, we've been scorned, we've been left out, you know, you know, on the other side, you know, and we're in this sadness, right? We're in this place of deep darkness, and then, you know, this voice, right, comes to us, right? The voice of Lord Buddha, and he says, "Sister, like, where did it come from?" And you know, the noble truths, right? Like the beauty of the noble truths. You know, number one, like life is suffering. Right? For me, I don't know about you, but for me, I resonated. I said, "Yes, you're right. You're right." Because I knew it. I knew it. I knew that pain that I couldn't speak to my father because both of us felt so much pain over what had happened to her, we couldn't communicate because we were too afraid of the pain between us, right? So I understood life is suffering. I believe you, right? And then someone, then for my coping, you know, for my, you know, teenage college years, it was like, okay, let's just try and work around that. Let's just try and process that. Let's try and make up some story, right? But someone to come in and to say, this suffering has a cause, right? The whole game changes then. Because it's not like, oh, you got dealt a bad card. You got dealt a bad hand. You know, let's see what you can do with your life. Right? You know, you know, like God threw you some sad thing. Let's see what you can do and maybe you can be a success, right? Suddenly someone said, that came from somewhere. That came from somewhere. Then I'm going to wake up and say, where did this come from, right? Where did this come from, right? Life is suffering. Suffering, what is it? There's a cause to that suffering. There's an end to that suffering. And the Buddha left an instruction manual, right? There is a way out. There's a path. Then the whole game is changed. I'm not wallowing in who I am or what has happened to me or what anyone has done to me or what condition I have anymore. I am no longer a victim. I'm no longer wallowing. I'm saying this came from somewhere. And there is a path where I can learn to understand where it came from. And I can end it. I can end it. I can end it for myself and I can end it for others. It doesn't have to be this way. It's not random. It's not random. It's not it's not your fate. It's not, you know, that's just how things go. Life is a roller coaster. You have the power now to take anything that comes to you, any pain from your past, any pain that comes in your future, and understand it. And fear, to me, is ignorance, right? Darkness is ignorance. And if I know why that guy hurt me so bad, right? If I know, hey, Mercedes, that pain came from somewhere, okay? You must have planted a similar seed in your past, okay, for that to ripen. So what are you going to do about it? Are you gonna sit there and be sad, right? Are you going to do the four forces? Are you going to purify whatever it is that caused that pain and then be very careful never to do that action to another person, right? So no longer, right? Like ignorance is darkness. Darkness is ignorance. And then for me, as long as I understand, as long as it makes sense to me, like somebody tells me, like, you know, that you're, like you're going through some kind of like crazy, I don't know, like initiation when you're a kid. Half of the fear is you don't know what they're going to do to you. You don't know what's going to happen. And if somebody sits down and tells me this is going to hurt, then this is going to happen, and then it's going to come out like this. If I have information and I understand it, then I'm not afraid. Even if it's painful, even if it's hard, I'm not afraid because I understand what I have to do. So anything, right, that comes to you, any news, any information, right? We were focusing on sickness today, right? Like any illness, right? You don't have to be afraid, right? You don't have to be afraid because you have the tools. You have the knowledge to say nothing comes from nothing, right? Nothing comes from nothing. Immediately, right? Taking the power away from that thing that scares you and say, I know where you came from. I will investigate where you came from. And I'm going to do the opposite. I'm going to take care of somebody else who's experiencing the same thing as I am. I'm going to start a support group for other people who have the same thing as I am. I'm going to do Tonglen on another person who has the same condition as I do. I'm going to get out and be active and change my condition. All right. Any questions? We can turn on the lights. We can also cover that. I'm done with this. People are allowed to talk, right? If they want to. The text basically is really quite beautiful. It gets deeper and deeper. She opens with these questions asking about, you know, kega na shi, you know. Birth, aging, sickness, and death. And he goes through and he speaks to her about each of them. And then they go through all the five heaps, they go through consciousness, they go through every phenomena, right? And he goes through and gives her a million different descriptions of emptiness, analogies for emptiness. One other thing I just wanted to say, I'm sorry, just one more thing. You know, there's a, about like, let's say, you know, like a tumor or something that's, you know, we're getting our head around this idea of not coming from me, right? A lot of times, you know, I love to go hear His Holiness the Dalai Lama speak, and his Thupten Jinpa, is that his translator? I love his accent, you know, and I love the crazy flowery language he uses, even if I don't completely understand it. Like, I love listening to him, and then I, you know, I have classes with Geshe, and then I understand kind of exactly what he meant, but somehow it's so, like, kind of beautiful and wonderful that you just feel like you're this deeply spiritual person, just like, you know, being in the audience and listening. But one thing that they used to say, and I liked the sound of it, and it made me feel good, but I didn't necessarily really understand what they were saying, was all phenomena is dependently arising. Okay. And anytime, like in class, when Geshe would say dependent origination, I would get a little nervous because I was like, what is that? What is that? You know, all phenomena are dependently arising, right? You know, and then everyone in the audience would breathe the sigh of relief. Ah, yes. It's so profound, right? Somehow that means everything's okay. And I thought about it. Dependent origination, what does dependent origination mean? It's like when you do your taxes, okay? And you get to a box in your taxes, and it says, do you have any dependents? What does that mean? What does that mean? Something, some person who couldn't survive without you. So when they say all phenomena is dependent, okay, dependently arising, dependent origination, it's dependent on you, okay? It is not self-standing. It is not self-existent. You need to be there for it to exist or else it can't exist, right? So, you know, how many dependents do you have? Right? Like, no, seriously, like everything is dependent on you. Everything is dependently arising, meaning they're all coming from you. They're all coming from your past karma. Everything that's in your world is coming from your past karma. So dependent origination, right? Or when they talk about when you see the pot on the stove, chuchok, like the highest thing before you see emptiness directly, you have this experience apparently, right? You know, you go in and you're making tea for your llama or something like this, and you know, you're staring at the pot. This is what I heard, okay? You're like staring at the pot and you're meditating on all these things, and then somehow this experience is called, like, you know, when you see dependent origination, right, how it works, and what's going on is you're looking at the pod, and then what they say is that all of a sudden you catch your mind. You catch your mind throwing the projection. And then you apparently have this experience of, oh my God. And you see that it's coming from you, right? Like somebody can tell you, I'm coming from you. But if in some kind of waking state you actually saw, okay, you saw that the object was dependent on you, that the object doesn't exist without you there to witness it, right? Then your mind explodes or something, you know. So that illness, that sickness, that tumor is dependently arising, right? It's springing up, okay? It's springing up, right? Based on how you treated people in the past. It's coming from seeds, right? It's the video camera spitting out. It's real. It's movie that you made, right? Which should leave you feeling empowered and should leave you feeling fearless to an extent. Fearless about your life, right? If you're making the right choices, right? What are the right choices? Moral choices, right? Following the 10 codes, right? For freedom. Then we have nothing to be afraid of. There's nothing that has power over us, right? All right. I have 10 minutes. Yes. Yes.
But you're saying there's only an Arya on the planet once every 1,000 years.
Yes. ACI open courses. Geshe says an Arya comes to the planet about once every 1,000 years. Lama Christie told me it was about once every 800 years.
One person on the planet has seen emptiness directly once every 1,000 years.
Yeah. But I heard that the last one was about 800 years ago from Lama Christie.
People who have seen emptiness directly are not Aryans? That we, Like, I mean, look, I've met 4 or 5 teachers this year who speak in the language of saying, when you see emptiness, it will be like this, you know?
Yeah.
So that makes 5 people. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm confused.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I only know what my lamas have told me, the rarity of that kind of being. Like Lama Christie would say, they're practically not even human, you know. Yeah.
Is there anything that's caused by something other than karma? Sometimes it seems like there's like a little bit of a relationship between what's happening now and what happened in the past, how things are ripening. And then, you know, I've heard that people say, like in Kalachakra Tantra, that they say that there are things that are caused, like the weather, they say, sight is caused by something other than karma. And then I get confused, like, are we, what school are we in?
Yeah.
Is that Majjhimika?
Like about the Kalachakra and weather, I've never heard that anything doesn't come from karma. And I've always actually heard the weather is an example of coming from your karma. There's some gray area about something when you're flipping over into being a Buddha and then you're no longer working with karma, you're working with, but that's really touchy stuff. And for me, I think I should just stay in the line of thought that everything comes from karma, and what I don't know about, I must not be close enough to understand it yet.
So then all cosmic conditions to, like, say, dependent origination. Like, right now, everybody's dependently originating.
Yeah.
Dependently originating, whatever.
Don't ever use those words around Geshe, will have a heart attack, right? I just, because they can confuse people, so I just use the regular, you know, colloquial language. I didn't know what they were talking about, so then I just tried to explore it, that's all. But he tends to not like that translation because it can be confusing for people.
But you could say, like, everybody's affecting each other, right? Would that be the same?
As what?
As dependent origination. Like, everybody's affecting each other, they supporting each other, like, we depend on everyone else to survive.
I would say just thinking of it as a singular object, that this object came from my karma and how I treated other people, and it couldn't exist without me, right? Like, it's the whole story of the pen. The pen couldn't be a pen unless I had allowed someone else to write with it, and that's why I see a pen, and that's why the dog sees a chew toy. So for the dog, a chew toy has arisen dependent on his karma, and for me, a pen has arisen dependent on my past karma.
That sounds like the same as emptiness.
Sure.
There must be a difference.
His Holiness saying a lot of talks that dependent origination and emptiness are two sides of the same coin.
Great. I don't know about that. Yeah.
Kind of related to her question, they do say that when a Buddha comes to this planet, like, then it's really easy to see emptiness directly because of, like, the virtue of, well, maybe not because of the virtue of the teacher, but because you're getting, like, profound teachings on how to see emptiness, right? Because, like, in a lot of scriptures they say, like, surrounded by the Buddha, there was, like, 500 arhats. You can only reach nirvana by having seen emptiness directly and getting rid of all the emotions.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and those are teachings that, you know, you can listen to it. It's on the ACI class when he says that, and I know it's in an open ACI class because I remember it. I was there, but that was 13 years ago. You know, so things could be changing. You know, I only can talk about the past, you know, and looking at who's got the title Arya Sangha, you know, like going, it's about every 1,000 years there was one. So I can only trace the past. And we know at the time of the Buddha, you know, people were, things were happening. I don't know going forward, you know, what's possible. Yeah.
From what I understand, the real conviction and the being fearless comes really after seeing emptiness directly, from what I study. Yet there is a huge way to do until that point. And what I want to ask is, where do you take the conviction, you or whoever, to get to that point and to do all the work? Because that's when, from what I understand, a person who's really had the conviction that this is how reality works and everything about karma and emptiness after he has seen emptiness.
That's all true.
And
I mean,
why is it? It's a bit naive to ask, but why is it so hard to see emptiness?
I don't know. The first question. On the path, I think for, you know, those, I have a bunch of Dharma friends in the audience and we talk a lot. And I think the thing that's helped us all is when we've had little successes of miracles of in our own life, of like we it's so hard to make that first leap. Because we're so selfish, we're so ingrained in working in this way of serving ourselves. And that one time where we actually did an act of truth and did some little action to say, I believe this stuff, and you know, gave some money to somebody we hated, or so, you know what I mean? Or like some kind of thing where we were like, I'm gonna praise this other person even though I'm afraid, or you tried to work with another person out of your belief. And then you had some big result. You know, and Geshe's story is the $250 million, whatever, diamond company. You know, so when we have applied emptiness in small ways, that understanding of karma and emptiness, and we saw some great results. And I think the Buddha talked about money because it's an instant kind of thing that you can see, and we're all, you know, grasping to money all the time. So I think, like, in our own lives, when we've done these little experiments and then had a big result back, it kind of gave you the fuel to keep going, you know? And I don't know at all about the second one. Sorry. Yeah.
Is it possible that the Arya can take multiple forms for you?
Sure, why not?
I don't know.
she asked, well, why don't you repeat it? Sure, why not? And that doesn't, you know, there are definitely angels and emanations of enlightened beings running around the planet and in your life. You know what I mean? And they're definitely beyond being Aryas. I think it's my understanding was to have that perception, to go from like human to Arya, that kind of, you know, it's kind of like the earth shakes. If something like that happens and it's historical, and at the moment that happens, you can check and find out if there are any others and what's going on, and you know if you're the only Arya, like that kind of a thing. So my understanding is it's about that kind of transformation of somebody getting on to that streamline of pretty much being on your way out, you know, and you're just giving teachings until you're totally changed. You know, we all know that there are angels, you know, around us, and they're totally enlightened. You know, we all know that the Buddha is definitely coming through your personal teacher, and that your personal teacher is higher than any other being on the planet, because they came for you personally to teach you, right? That's what the Buddha said. He said, I can't hit you on the head and transfer my karma to you. I love you. If I could, I would. All I can do is teach you. So the person who showed up for you personally as your personal teacher is as high as you're going to get, because that's the one that showed up to teach you. I think in terms of understanding explanations of what emptiness is, for me, I would go to a source of somebody that I feel has actually gone through that process and could instruct me as a human, you know, as how I need to set myself up that this could happen to me, you know, hopefully sooner rather than later, hopefully not 800 years, but hopefully sooner than then, you know. Yeah, Brian.
It seems, Mercedes, well, that it's an emptiness question, because if you have the karma to see Aryas, then you see Aryas, and if you don't have the karma, then you won't. So it seems like that answer applies to everybody.
Sure. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
It's like the same thing. So like one way, we have one Arya every 800 years.
Yeah.
So if we just take that literally,
yeah,
then there's like hardly any hope for anyone in this room.
Yeah.
And then what are we doing? Like, cause that's what we want to achieve, and it's like hardly any hope.
Yeah.
But by the other side, you say there's angels and emanations of holy beings who obviously they're enlightened, and to become enlightened, you have to see emptiness directly. That's a step before becoming enlightened. And in that sense, we all have hope here.
I would also just hope to inspire you that if you ever had a chance to get a teaching from an Arya, it's not even possible. Like, your karma's not. It's just beyond fortune. And you should really value that time that person's on the planet, because they're not going to be here forever. Yeah, Michael.
Two things. One, Holy Bishop Michael has said, when you have the direct perception of emptiness, you automatically are able to have 100 emanations.
Okay.
In answer to her question. And the other thing is, I think we've got such a special guy here. Nobody on this planet goes around the world teaching emptiness like he does. And I think he's setting it up to break that rule.
Yeah.
I think he often says we're so close.
Yeah.
I think he's setting it up so very soon many of us may become artists.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Sashi.
Sangye shindu mikte uwargi Drukunam dakshin la jupasho Idam guranam mandala kam yuryatayami Di kewoku Sonam yeshe suksoshin Sanam yeshe len jongwe Tampa kuni tu parsho.
Thank you, guys.